All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are previewing the Falcons tight end position as we head into this summer's training camp, talking about how much growth we'll see from Kyle Pitts in year two, how big an impact Anthony Firkser will have as the number two tight end, and what sort of battles and competition we'll see for some of those back in depth roles at tight end.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this preeminent Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And I want to thank everyone that makes Locked On Falcons their first listen each and every day. All Locked On Sports Atlanta podcasts, like Locked On Falcons, like Locked On Hawks, Locked On Bulldogs, Locked On Braves, as well as A to Z with Mark Zeno, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, and ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanitra Batiz are free and available on a variety of podcast platforms Monday through Friday, whether you want to check us out on Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, and of course, you can also check us out on YouTube. And if you subscribe to Locked On Falcons on YouTube, hit that bell, hit that like. You know, you'll get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. So today we're continuing our training camp previews position by position. We've talked about quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers. Now we're talking about the tight end position. And with each of these previews, we're sort of asking one big question of the season, one big question of the summer, and whatever else is on the plate for each of these position groups. And the big question of the season is, how good can Kyle Pitts be, right? And I think a lot of this team's success this upcoming season hinges on Kyle Pitts improving and being the dominant unicorn that we know he's capable of. You know, despite having a very historic rookie season, one of the topics that we've touched upon a number of times over the last 6 months is, why does it still feel like there was some meat left on the bone? And I've addressed that a couple of times over the last several months. You know, back in January, we talked about Kyle Pitts and the offenses in general's red zone struggles and some of the causes for that. Recently, a listener asked, like, why did it feel like the Falcons offense under Dirk Cutter in 2020 was better than the Arthur Smith offense in 2021? And I talked about how the 2021 offense didn't have the sort of same explosiveness that the previous year's offense had, and that felt like things were struggling a little bit more. But going back to those red zone concerns, checking out that episode in late January, I basically related the Falcons' red zone struggles to three major issues, particularly when Kyle Pitts, he was not as good at the catch point as he needed to be to convert some of those red zone opportunities that he had. You also had some relatively vanilla play calling from Arthur Smith when it came to some of the red zone play calls. And I also thought the offensive line was lackluster. And I know a lot of fans look at that offensive line and still have concerns about that. I certainly know I have concerns about Arthur Smith's play calling moving forward. I know fans probably have a little bit less of those issues. But the reality is Kyle Pitts doesn't really control those things. He can't control how the offensive line blocks or whether or not Arthur Smith is designing more than just lob passes to him in the end zone as a way to get him scores and touchdowns. You know, the things that he can control is his ability to win at the catch point. His things that he can control is his ability to make more plays after the catch. And I think that's part of the reason why, despite him having a great rookie season and as good a rookie season as any tight end has had in the last 50 years, there's still a lot of untapped potential. And, you know, one of the big stories of this season is going to be whether or not the Falcons will be able to tap into that potential. One of the other big storylines I'm curious to watch when in regards to Kyle Pitts is, what is his connection like with Marcus Mariota? You know, one of the questions I'm going to have, you know, in a couple of years when we have hindsight to be able to tell us this, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Kyle Pitts, how he develops, if he thrives in Atlanta, particularly if he winds up, you know, having different quarterback throwing him the football, you know, each year for the first three, maybe even 4 years of his NFL career. We know he's going to have a different quarterback in year two for him. How does that affect his performance, and how does he get on the same page and build that rapport with Marcus Mariota, who, since he won't necessarily have that same level of continuity with Matt Ryan from a year ago? But one of the things we've noted about Marcus Mariota, when we look at the more positive aspects that Mariota could potentially bring to the offense, we look back at that 2012 Raiders Chargers game that Mariota stepped in for an injured Derek Carr and played really well in that game. And in that game, Darren Waller got a lot of looks, right? Waller had 12 targets, 9 catches, 150 yards, and a touchdown in that game. And that game still, to this day, is like the fifth most targeted Darren Waller has been in a game. So based off of that, we knew Marcus Mariota was willing to feed Darren Waller. We assume he'll have no qualms about feeding Kyle Pitts. And again, that gets into, you know, him being better at in contested catch situations, because Marcus Mariota is not going to be afraid to throw into some of those tight window passes. And we'll see if Kyle Pitts can, you know, secure those balls and potentially build a great relationship, a better relationship with Mariota than he necessarily had with Matt Ryan. And we'll see how that influences this upcoming season. Again, going back to the other question I have about Smith's play calling, you know, that is related to this, because I do wonder a little bit, are we going to see Arthur Smith kind of steer into Marcus Mariota's, alleged tendency and desire to force feed Kyle Pitts, right? Are we going to see more plays designed for Kyle Pitts? And one of the ways that the Raiders feed Darren Waller is they feature a lot of short stuff. When Darren Waller led the NFL in targets among tight ends back in 2020 with 140, you know, 66% of those targets didn't travel more than 10 yards in the air, right? You look at how Arthur Smith utilized Jonnu Smith in 2019 and 2020, 73% of Jonnu Smith's targets in those two seasons were throws under 10 yards. And when you look at that for Kyle Pitts this past year, that was only 47%. So there's room for the Falcons to get Kyle Pitts more of the football. And I think, you know, how Arthur Smith utilized Jonnu Smith once again illustrates, you know, the continued theme I've noticed with Arthur Smith's offense and his play calling, that it's not necessarily about designing plays. It's more about getting the ball in the hands of your playmakers and letting them cook. And Jonnu Smith was able to do that. We know A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry were able to do that. We saw Cordero Patterson. That's part of the reason why Cordero Patterson thrived. And we need to see if Kyle Pitts can add his name to that list of those guys that can cook when they get the ball in the hands. And that goes back to the previous point about missed tackles and the ability after the catch, where Kyle Pitts, according to Pro Football Focus, only forced 5 missed tackles all year. And 2 of those came in week 17 against the Bills. And you compare that to Jonnu Smith in his first year under Arthur Smith, was able to force 14 missed tackles on just 35 catches. So he had almost tripled the number of forced missed tackles after the catch on half the workload that Kyle Pitts saw last year. I mean, Calvin Ridley only had 4 last year in 5 games, and in roughly half the catches that Kyle Pitts had a year ago. So we need to see if Kyle Pitts can step up in that regard. And for those of you that, you know, sit here and think, oh, you're being too harsh on Kyle Pitts and all these various things, it's just about setting the expectations, setting the parameters in which we can measure progress for Kyle Pitts, right? He can only control what he can control. He can't control the play call. He can't control the run game, the offensive line, the quarterback play, the defense, et cetera, right? But he can control whether he's better at the catch point. He can control if he's better after the catch. He can control if he's a better blocker. He can't control if he's a better route runner. So those are the things that we'll be looking for. We'll have answers to those questions 6 months from now. And it's just, you know, whether or not we like the questions or like the answers that we get on those questions. But we don't necessarily have to wait 6 months to get answers for what will be the biggest question of the summer, which will be focused on sort of the back end competition for various roles like the blocking tight end, as well as what to make of this guy from the CFL and Braden Linnaeus and what he's all about. And we'll get into all of that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons training camp preview of the Falcons tight end position. But before we get there, we know that, you know, some sports leagues are winding down. The NBA finals are over. Colorado just took care of business in the Stanley Cup finals. You just had the NBA draft. But just because those things are over doesn't mean that you can't head on over and check out other sports at the number one source for all your betting needs. And that's, of course, betonline.net. Whether you're looking for the latest odds, contests, or player props, you can find it all there. You got Wimbledon still going on. You got Major League Baseball. You got boxing, esports, Vegas casino games. And you can still check out hockey futures, NBA futures, NFL futures. You want to bet on Drake London winning Offensive Rookie of the Year, Arthur Smith being Coach of the Year, Marcus Mariota being Comeback Player of the Year. Bet on who's going to be the Rookie of the Year in the NBA next year, who's going to win the NBA Finals next year. Yeah, Stanley Cup, we're less than 24 hours removed from Colorado taking care of his business against the Lightning, but we already got future bets on who's going to win the Stanley Cup next year. Colorado, 4-1 odds, Lightning right after them. Maybe you want to take a flyer on the Rangers. Maybe you want to sit there and say, hey, it's the time for the Blackhawks to rise again. Let's take the Chicago Blackhawks. You can find it all by heading over to the website at betonline.net and learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. So the big question of the summer is going to be, you know, who is that blocking tight end? And if you listen to yesterday's episode where we did our John Fitzpatrick scouting report breaking down the Falcons sixth round tight end, I touched upon some of this in that episode, talking about the battle to essentially replace Lee Smith as the team's primary inline tight end between John Fitzpatrick and Parker Hesse. And as I noted on yesterday's episode, I do think it is Parker Hesse's job to lose. I think he was an underrated blocker for the team last year. You look at his, some of his Pro Football Focus grades, it reflects that there were 13 tight ends, according to Pro Football Focus, that had plus 70 grades as both a run blocker and a pass blocker. And no, Lee Smith was not in that group, but Parker Hesse was. Now, the question is going to be, that was with a limited sample size. And we saw similarly Jaden Graham back in 2019 with a limited sample size show out as a blocker, but then the following year could not continue that and kind of fell off a cliff as a blocker. And we wonder sort of whether or not, you know, Parker Hesse's going to pick up where he left off, or does, if he doesn't, that certainly will open the door for John Fitzpatrick to win that competition. And as I noted in yesterday's episode, when we broke down John Fitzpatrick, I thought he was a little bit better as an H-back, as a blocker there, than he was as an inline tight end. And him being an inline tight end certainly is going to be important for his success moving forward. And we'll sort of circle back to that a little bit later. But as I've noted several times on other scouting reports over the last, you know, 2 months, you know, the thing we should always bring up is just because a guy didn't do something in college doesn't mean that he won't or can't do something when he gets to the pros. And obviously, I think Fitzpatrick has the potential to be an impactful inline tight end. We'll just sort of see if he can deliver on that this summer. And my expectation right now, looking at, you know, roster projections and whatnot, I'm expecting the Falcons to keep four tight ends in right now. If, you know, Fitzpatrick is able to, you know, show that his floor is a little higher than what I'm currently projecting it to be, it may be as little as three tight ends, with Fitzpatrick winning that third tight end spot and being that inline blocker. But in reality, I may, in fact, instead of saying we're going to keep four tight ends on the roster, I should say we're going to keep four and a half tight ends, because that half kind of factors in Felipe Franks. And, you know, as I noted in the quarterback camp preview, I do wonder how much in-game action we're going to see from Felipe Franks this summer at the tight end position, or does he spend those snaps playing quarterback, or whatever the case may be? That's another question for this summer. And I know a lot of Falcon fans are not looking forward to the answer that we're going to get at that position. But I, as I said in that quarterback camp preview, I do think getting Felipe Franks more run at the tight end position makes more sense moving forward. We know that he doesn't necessarily have a future here in Atlanta, or we believe, right? We don't know that. I'm sure Locked On Gators host Brandon Olson just, you know, rolled over in his grave hearing me say that we know that Felipe Franks doesn't have a future. Sorry, Brandon. But, you know, we kind of know, right? And so, you know, if the Falcons can develop a competent number two tight end with Felipe Franks, it makes sense. His brother, Jordan Franks, you know, is a tight end as well. So he, it's not like he doesn't have the skill set or the potential or the body or whatever the case may be to be a developmental option. So we'll see if the Falcons can take advantage of that. But I'm sure a lot of you, instead of seeing more Felipe Franks at the tight end, you're more intrigued by this other sort of talented 6 foot five, 6 foot six, you know, athlete in Braden Linnaeus that the Falcons picked up from the CFL. Now, he's listed at like 6'5", 220 by the official website. That was his sort of official listing, you know, by the CFL. But when he came out of college a couple of years ago, he measured in at like 6'6", 245. So we know he's big. We just don't know exactly how big he is. And, you know, right now I'm not really expecting Linnaeus to make the roster. I'm expecting him to sort of stick on the practice squad. And I think, you know, certainly for the same reasons that we're talking about with Felipe Franks, having that sort of developmental pass catcher behind Kyle Pitts is very intriguing for the future, because in a world where we're hoping and expecting to see this offense revolve more and more around Kyle Pitts, you know, you have to ask the question, if that's the case, what happens if and when he gets hurt? Right. And that was an issue that the Falcons faced for the better part of the last decade when it came to Julio Jones, when he was the quote unquote sun that all the planets revolved around when it came to the Falcons offense. And we're not expecting Braden Linnaeus to be Kyle Pitts 2.0. Maybe he can be a poor man's Kyle Pitts. Essentially, can he be the Miko Hardman to Kyle Pitts' Tyreek Hill? And as I've noted several times on the podcast over the years, it's not that Miko Hardman is as good as Tyreek Hill, but that, you know, the Chiefs offense doesn't stop functioning just because Tyreek Hill's out of the lineup. Just like in 2016, we didn't see the Falcons offense stop functioning for those two games when Julio Jones was out of the lineup and Aljack Robinson was replacing him, because, you know, when you have good play calling, hint, hint. You know, it doesn't really matter about the talent all that much. Your success is not as driven by the talent as it is by the ski, right? Again, no one's going to sit here and tell you that Mecole Hardman and Aldrick Robinson are as good as, you know, Tyreek Hill and Julio Jones, but, you know, the offense still functions because it's all about the scheme. And so that gets to the core question marks that you continue to hear me raise about Arthur Smith and his offense, but we won't dive too deeply into that conversation on today's episode. So, you know, with Linnaeus potentially making a roster, I certainly think he has a chance, particularly if he has a good summer and, you know, shows that he does have that receiving potential. You know, other teams are going to start sniffing around him. And so therefore it's going to not be in the Falcons' interest to put him on the practice squad where they could risk him getting scooped up by another team. And so instead they could stash him on the roster, even if he doesn't necessarily be expected to have a significant role this season. And certainly John Fitzpatrick winning that third tight end spot and beating out Parker Hesse will certainly help Linnaeus in that regard, because then they can still carry forward tight ends, but it could be Linnaeus as that fourth guy instead of, say, Parker Hesse. But part of the reason why I'm not expecting Braden Linnaeus, even if he does make the roster, to have a significant role on this team and on this offense this upcoming season, and he's more of a stash for the future, is because the role that I foresee Braden Linnaeus potentially have in the future kind of is already going to be filled by Anthony Firkser, who we're going to talk about and how he's going to be potentially utilized and how that could really help this offense look better this season as we continue today's Locked On Falcons camp preview. But before we get there, again, I'm going to plug the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family, where you can find three shows with four hosts breaking down not only the local sports, but also the national sports. That's Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanitra Batiste. And you can check out A to Z with Mark Zeno, all on the same podcast feed, Locked On Sports Atlanta, on your preferred podcast platform, including on YouTube. And if you check out Locked On Sports Atlanta on YouTube, you'll also be able to check out the Locked On Braves postcast, breaking down every Atlanta Braves win and loss from here until October. So go check them out on your preferred podcast platform and on YouTube. So obviously a lot of today's episode has been kind of Arthur Smith adjacent. And obviously, given his background at the tight end position, it feels like a lot of, you know, Arthur Smith is tied up in this tight end position. You know, I think a lot of the conversation about any of the Falcons offensive positions should be Arthur Smith adjacent, going back to the point about play calling and system and scheme and all that various stuff. And particularly with the tight end position, you know, I think that makes a ton of sense as well, because one of the things I've learned over, you know, 20 plus years of watching football is that tight end production is often, you know, related directly to usage and how play calling utilizes certain players. And we saw that manifest itself here in Atlanta a couple of years ago when Sark changed how he utilized Austin Hooper from 2017 to 2018, led to Hooper having a Pro Bowl season in the latter year. And we kind of saw the reverse of that a year ago when we saw Hayden Hurst and how he was utilized under Dirk Cutter in 2020 to versus how he was utilized under Arthur Smith in 2021, where you saw simply, at least as I put it, Arthur Smith refusing to utilize Hayden Hurst. And I don't expect we'll see that happen again in 2021. Now with Anthony Firkser stepping into that role vacated by Hayden Hurst, frankly, it can't happen again, in my humble opinion, because once you start diving into the numbers, you can't help but conclude, you know, Hayden Hurst was, you know, some, maybe not a lot, but some wasted potential last year. And, you know, that may contribute to why Hayden Hurst seemed to throw some shade in Arthur Smith's direction, seemingly in Arthur Smith's direction, when he talked about coaching authenticity when he signed with the Bengals. I know fans are going to be, you know, fandom is going to compel a lot of you guys to come out and defend Arthur Smith and say, oh, it's not fair. But again, when you start looking at the numbers, it, you know, the case for Arthur Smith, the defense of Arthur Smith, at least in how he utilized Hayden Hurst, is not very promising. You know, he's kind of guilty of that crime, if you want to call it that. Because when you look at the Falcons and their usage of two or more tight ends in the offense last year, they utilized two or more tight ends and had personal groupings that featured two or more tight ends, the second most in the NFL last year, right? Roughly about 47% of their offensive plays featured two or more tight ends, or roughly half. Right. And then when you look at 12 personnel, that standard sort of two tight end set, right, they were the most pass heavy team in the NFL out of 12 personnel, throwing the ball 65% of all their plays that they had 12 personnel in the field, when the league average out of that personnel grouping was 45%. Right. And then you look at basically the fact that Anthony Firkser in 2020 under Arthur Smith had roughly the same amount of workload playing time as Hayden Hurst had in 2021 when you look at how many routes they ran. But on a per snap basis, Firkser was targeted, you know, roughly 50% more than Hayden Hurst was. And so this expectation that Hayden Hurst can, or Anthony Firkser, I should say, will be much more productive in this number two tight end role than Hayden Hurst was a year ago is part of the reason, despite my criticism, is part of the reason why I still expect there to be significant year two growth for Arthur Smith as a play caller and for this offense in year two. It's not solely because, you know, Anthony Firkser is going to get 18 more targets than Hayden Hurst is going to get or whatever that number winds up being. But it's just, to me, it's a question. It's not a question of if there will be improvement. It's just a question of how much improvement. And do we see, say, Anthony Firkser, you know, get 50 plus more catches this year than, you know, which is what I kind of thought Hayden Hurst would have going into last season. And he wound up with like 26 instead. And certainly I think that's a possibility because when I'm looking at this offense and we're talking about, you know, the Falcons using two or more tight ends, you know, on roughly half their plays and looking at the five receivers that are going to be on the field for that 12 personnel that, you know, they're featuring quite a bit. They're not featuring specifically 12 personnel, you know, 47% of the time. It's closer to 30% of the time. But, you know, having these tight ends, whether it's two tight ends or three tight ends or whatever the case may be, you know, I'm expecting those five main wide receivers for the Falcons to be part of that 12 personnel package. Well, you know, the two wide receivers in those situations could be, you know, Drake London, presumably Bryan Edwards. The two tight ends, of course, are going to be Kyle Pitts and Anthony Firkser. And you're going to have the running back, you know, is the one in the 1-2 out of the 12 personnel going to be Cordero Patterson. And in, you know, the rough order that I'm projecting them in terms of who's going to be the most targeted, I would go from, you know, greatest to least, you know, Pitts, London, Patterson, then Edwards, and then probably Firkser as that number five guy. Right. And, you know, when we get to the conversation about usage and how Anthony Firkser is going to use, how is his presence going to influence that of Kyle Pitts, right? Because, you know, are we going to see more of Kyle Pitts be this inline tight end than he was a year ago, right? You look at the 2 years that Anthony Firkser played under Arthur Smith in Tennessee, he lined up in line on only 20% of his snaps, right? That's part of the reason why when we had Tyler Rowland on the podcast several months ago to talk about Anthony Firkser of Locked On Titans, you know, he basically called Anthony Firkser an oversized slot receiver like Cole Beasley. You know, that's why I will forever refer to him as Swole Beasley. And so if we, you know, we saw last year Kyle Pitts spend a lot of time in the slot, split out wide, you know, only 32% of Kyle Pitts snaps a year ago came as an inline player. You know, you compare that to Hayden Hurst, it was like 56%. Lee Smith was 98%, going back to the conversation we had earlier about Parker Hesse versus John Fitzpatrick, that blocking tight end, essentially having to put his hand in the dirt and mix it up with some of these defensive linemen. You look at Jonnu Smith in those 2 years under Arthur Smith, 75% of his snaps started with him lining up as an inline tight end. And, you know, some of Firkser's high slot usage, particularly in 2020, was due to the injury to Adam Humphries, that once Humphries went out of the season with an injury midway through the season, it was Firkser that got the bulk of those snaps in the slot instead of, you know, another backup wide receiver like Cameron Batson. But, you know, are we going to see more of Pitts as an inline tight end? And if we are, and I'm assuming we will, how much more? Is it, you know, 40% of his snaps going to be in line compared to 32% last year? Is it 50%? Is it 60%? You know, I would be surprised if it goes over 60%. And, you know, how that affects Kyle Pitts. How does all this affect Drake London? Because you've heard me talk about this when we, you know, a couple of days ago when we talked about the wide receiver going into training camp, but you've heard me reiterate this point a number of times over the last, you know, two-ish months, which is my belief that Drake London is more of a big slot, is best utilized as a big slot in the same mold as, say, a Michael Thomas or an Anquan Boldin than necessarily as that true blue X receiver that thrives on the outside in the way that A.J. Brown or Julio Jones or Cortland Sutton or T. Higgins or whoever you want to put on that list of top tier X wide receivers. And so if Firkser is getting a lot of snaps in the slot, if Kyle Pitts is getting a lot of snaps in the slot, does that limit the amount of snaps that Drake London is going to get? Now, I expect Drake London to get some snaps in the slot, a decent amount of snaps in the slot. We saw Russell Gage spend about 40% of his snaps in the slot, despite the presences of guys like Kyle Pitts. But when you throw Firkser into the mix, you know, and he's getting more of those snaps, does that take away? Is it, you know, Drake London, is that 30%? Is that 20%? Whatever that number is. And how does he work with that? You know, is he better in the slot? Is he better on the outside? Again, hopefully we'll have answers to these questions 6 months from now, whether or not Drake London can thrive and what his role is going to be. And that obviously has ramifications for how this team is going to build their roster and build their talent pool, you know, going into next offseason? Do they look for another tight end to replace Anthony Firkser, who's a free agent? Do they look for more of an inline guy? Or do they look for, you know, is Braden Linney is going to step up and be more of that slot receiver type of guy? If Drake London thriving on the outside, okay, then we don't have to worry about the slot receiver. If Drake London is going to be more of that slot receiver, that big slot, do we go out there and get another, you know, outside speed wide receiver or whatever the case may be? All these questions hopefully will be answered 6 months from now. We don't know the answers, but I think it's more than fair to raise the questions, to have the conversation. And this gets back to some of the stuff that I know some of you guys aren't necessarily thrilled with, the sort of perspective of the podcast, the positivity versus the negativity. You know, I spend too much time talking about the glass being half empty versus, you know, you want to hear more about, you know, the ways that the glass is half full. And I get that. But, you know, the way I kind of see it, and, you know, I don't mean this to be antagonistic towards fans, but like, I'm not in denial about, you know, this team being a real rebuilding team. And I think, you know, I'm not getting a cut of those PSL checks. So whether or not you get hyped or excited to see the Falcons this season is inconsequential to me, right? I'm here, in my opinion, that if you do choose to go to the games or watch the games, we're talking about the things that you should be paying attention to. And, you know, I know this is going to be somewhat controversial to some of you guys, but like, I sit here and I think we should all have, you know, some skepticism. We should all have some questions about the direction of this football team, because the people that are the decision makers, Terry Fontenot, Arthur Smith, Dean Pease, et cetera, you know, they've never done this before. They've never successfully rebuilt a team. You know, Terry Fontenot didn't rebuild a team in New Orleans. Arthur Smith's never drafted and developed a franchise quarterback in Tennessee. And Dean Pease has never built up a defense from, you know, from the bottom up. He didn't inherit bad defenses in New England and Baltimore. He inherited a below average defense in Tennessee and made them better. But like, they've never built up a defense. And again, I'm not saying all that to be critical of these people. I'm just sitting here saying, like, can we have the conversation about what's the right way of building this team? What's the right way of rebuilding this roster? And it's not to sit here and say that some random guy that's hosting a daily podcast has all figured it out and that they just follow these three easy steps, they'll be successful. But it is one of those things where I do think people should have a healthy degree of skepticism about whether or not the powers that be and the decision makers currently running the Atlanta Falcons, you know what they're doing and are doing. And we should have that conversation. But I'm sure many of you think it's an unhealthy degree of skepticism that I have about these decision makers, which is, you know, fair and your prerogative to have. But speaking of skepticism, I still have concerns about the play calling. I have concerns about the long-term situation at quarterback. I have concerns about the running game. I have concerns about the offensive line. I suspect, and we'll see, you know, how this is, you know, 6 months from now when we get to the end of this 2022 season. But, you know, I suspect I'll still have concerns about the quarterback. I'll still have concerns about the running game. I'll still have concerns about the offensive line. And those will be concerns that will carry into next offseason. I'm hoping that I do not have concerns about the play calling anymore. And, you know, I am hoping that, you know, I'm not going to have as many concerns about the receivers, 6 months from now as I've had over the last 6 months, right? That we're not having the conversation again 6 months from now that, you know, Kyle Pitts was good, but like, there still feels like a lot of meat left on the bone. And, you know, that's personified in Calvin Ridley, that's personified in Hayden Hurst, as I've illustrated on today's episode, where it just felt like, you know, the Falcons left some plays on the field. They left some meat on that bone. I'm hoping that we're not having that conversation because Arthur Smith, say what you will about his offense. Okay. It wasn't a talent issue. It wasn't the Falcons didn't have talent. They had first round players, Calvin Ridley, Hayden Hurst. Like, it wasn't talent that was holding those guys back. It was just like, maybe he just didn't know how to use them, and he knows how to use these guys. So we'll see if 6 months from now we can definitively say, okay, he just needed to get his guys and he knows how to use these guys. And the play calling issues that Aaron has been complaining about for the last, you know, 9 or so months are no longer going to be issues that he's going to be complaining about for the next 9 months. And I'll instead find something else to complain about. And, I think the thing that I will probably be focusing on, and some of you guys will be focusing on, is maybe the offensive line, right? That's one area where you might be able to match my level of skepticism about that unit going forward. And we'll talk about that later this week when we continue our training camp previews of the various offensive position groups, talk about some of the camp battles there. But tomorrow's episode, we'll be having a guest, and that will be Yahoo Sports' Matt Harmon. You know him also from Reception Perception. And, you know, we'll be talking about this receiving group as well, probably spending a lot of time talking about Drake London. Does Matt sort of see him in his charting, see him as that X wide receiver or that big slot? Or the hope that I think a lot of people have is that we'll see a combination of both. And so we'll get into Matt's thoughts on that. We'll probably talk a little bit more about Kyle Pitts and some of these other offensive skill players, given that Matt does a lot of fantasy work over at Yahoo Sports, and some of the players that he might be a little bit more high on at this point in the summer heading into this upcoming fantasy season, as well as we on tomorrow's episode. So I look forward to whatever feedback you guys want to provide me on this tight end position, any of the topics I discussed today, Arthur Smith's play calling, Anthony Firkser's uses, Kyle Pitts's uses, how big a jump he'll make, Braden Linnaeus, Don Fitzpatrick, Parker Hesse. We didn't talk about Tarka Fisk or John Rainey. We talked a little bit about John Rainey at the running back position and how he might get some work at the fullback position. Tucker Fisk is sort of Parker Hesse 2.0, guy that, you know, is 280-pound defensive lineman tight end at Stanford, you know, can maybe make the successful conversion and be that sort of beefy inline tight end that's basically an extra tackle like Lee Smith was throughout his career. Maybe he's in the mix there. So this is an interesting group of players that the Falcons have collected at the tight end position. You could sit here and argue any of the six or seven guys or whatever that number is that they have, bringing to camp could make the roster and or the practice squad this year. So it'll be interesting to see what battles unfold this summer. This will be, to me, one of the more competitive positions, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. So we'll see what unfolds. I look forward to hearing your feedback on, you know, Aaron, you know, come out and tell me, you know, why, you know, I'm being too harsh on Arthur Smith, or tell me what, hey, you didn't even give Arthur Smith more of the business moving forward. So whatever you want to provide your feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at Locked On Falcons or Facebook at Locked On Falcons. Send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Or of course, you can leave a comment here on the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel. And I thank you guys for making Locked On Falcons your first listen. And of course, always have recommendations for your second listen. In addition to the Locked On Atlanta Sports Podcast family, whether you're checking out Locked On Sports Atlanta to check out A to Z or Hitting Hard or ATL Day Ones, you can also check out Locked On Braves, Locked On Bulldogs, Locked On Hawks, or you could check out Locked On NFL. If you haven't gotten enough of your football fix, check out what the other 32 teams are up to this time of year. So check out Locked On NFL or any of your preferred Locked On shows on your preferred podcast platform, including on YouTube. Appreciate it, guys. Till then.